So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Stephanie Bloomingdale is the first woman president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO after serving as the organization's secretary-treasurer since 2010. And there's an election coming in November 6th and one 2 years from now, so it's a great time to do a Newsmakers with Stephanie. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Steve.
Go back to how your involvement, your start with the labor movement. Maybe first job, first time you joined a union. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Well, I really grew up in this movement. My mother was a public health nurse and involved in her union. My grandmother worked at St. Mike's Hospital for 40 years. St. Mike's is no longer there. But so I grew up around the kitchen table talking about working people's issues, about nursing issues. And I also worked as a certified nursing assistant with Alzheimer's patients myself. So a long history in this. And then, of course, worked with the Wisconsin Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals as their director of public policy, but at the same time worked to negotiate contracts for nurses and healthcare workers, did public policy work, lobbying, and advocating on behalf of patients for safe patient care and making sure that the services that our nurses and healthcare providers were providing were the best that they could be to ensure quality health care.
Okay, and then you became Secretary-Treasurer of the state AFL-CIO in 2010.
That's right.
And then now you've moved up. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Glass ceiling I hear breaking, Stephanie, the distance?
Well, that's interesting that you say that. But I am the first woman president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, and people say to me, well, how does that feel? And I say, well, you know, I might not look like the image of a labor leader that some people may have in their heads. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't look like George Meany. You know,
I mean, I will concede that. Yes.
I concede that. I don't look like George Meany, but what I want to say is that my peers that I've worked with, labor leaders and union members from Manitowoc to Milwaukee to Superior, from Superior to Kenosha, know that I can get the job done, and they know that I get results. So in the end, that's what they want, and so that's why they place their confidence in me to be the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO.
Let's talk about the AFL-CIO. If I'm American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations, do I have that right?
You got it right.
And it started when nationally?
The merger was in the 1950s.
Yes. And then Wisconsin has had an active AFL.
But that was the merger of the AFL and the CIO. That's the national. But we've been around the Wisconsin AFL-CIO for more than 100 years, all the way back to the 1800s. And we have all the presidents up on our wall in our headquarters from the beginning. And I think it was, you know, back in the 1880s when working people came together through the Wisconsin AFL-CIO to advocate on behalf of working people.
Wisconsin has had a strong AFL-CIO, hasn't it, over its history?
Absolutely, very strong.
Is that strong because we're either number one or number two in terms of manufacturers? Is that one reason?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one reason. And I think that the history of Wisconsin is very much a history that is a forward-thinking. I mean, that's our motto, right? But forward thinking, and not people just thinking about what they themselves can get today, but also thinking about the future, about tomorrow, and the kids that are going to come after us. And so I think that we were blessed with a lot of really forward thinking leaders, including labor leaders in Wisconsin, that advocated for things like unemployment compensation.
Invented here. Progressive income tax, invented here.
Workers' compensation, invented here. The first kindergarten, invented here. The first public employee union in Wisconsin. The list goes on and on of the things that we are so proud of that we've done in Wisconsin. And that's what that's our history, the Wisconsin idea, is to be thinking about others and that that's an important part of who we are. And so that's why it's been so disappointing to see these attacks on organized labor over the last 8 years. And because when you come down to it, any working person knows that they're working because they want a better life for themselves, better life for their kids, better life for their communities. And working people know, every working person, whether they're in a union or not in a union, they know that there's more power in solidarity. And the reason that we have unions is so that working people have a shot to come together, to have a more powerful voice in the workplace, to negotiate better wages, better working conditions. And when we do that, what happens? We have stronger families and stronger communities, and then voila, we have a strong middle class. And that is something that makes all of our lives better. So when workers do better, when individual workers do better, our society also does better. And so that goal, that mission that we have is so important that that it's important not to lose sight of that's what we're all about.
Can you explain the relationship between private sector and public sector unions in light of your new position?
Well, the Wisconsin AFL-CIO is made up of many different affiliates, both public sector, private sector, building trades. Unions coming together to amplify their individual voices throughout their industries through the Wisconsin AFL-CIO.
Okay. So the AFL-CIO then represents both public and private sector.
That's correct. That's correct.
Now let's talk about you became Secretary-Treasurer in 2010. Things started happening in 2011 with Act 10. So talk about the impact of 8 years of the policies, the big changes that have been made in the Capitol.
Yeah, this was, when you really think about this, and I thought about this before I was coming on your show to sort of do a retrospect, but in 2010, Scott Walker won the election, and I think it's important to remember that he never talked about coming after organized or working people.
He never made that a central campaign theme?
He didn't talk about it. He didn't say, I'm going to try to bust unions, I'm going to try to dismantle public sector unions or private sector unions, or I'm going to, come after the rights or the individual rights for organizing into a union that people have. He never talked about that. But yet we know the first thing that he did was come after organized labor and labor unions in a big way with his Act 10. And so when he did it, I was very proud of our response because it was important that people understood what was going on, that this was really at undermining people's basic fundamental right to have the right to come together, to stand together, to have a better, better paycheck, better benefits, and again, to have a strong middle class. And so that's what it was. That's what we needed to talk about, and that's what we did. And so people came together, moms, dads, grandmas, kids, from all over the state, and said resoundingly, "No, Governor Walker, you do not have the right to take away our basic right to organization and union." And so we were very proud. I was very proud of our fight back. And it really comes down to what, I was just elected just a couple of weeks ago to the president. And one of the things that I promised to our delegates is that while we may not win every round, my promise is that we will never, ever get out of the ring until the fight is over.
Didn't then-candidate Walker telegraph his Act 10 by calling public employees the haves and the rest of Wisconsin the have-nots? I mean, wasn't that a signal that reporters like me should have picked up on, that he was going to try to make profound and fundamental changes?
I think so. And looking back, I remember reading The Economist, and there was an article in there, and this was about in December or January, that was talking about this idea of the haves and the have-nots and trying to separate public sector from private sector. And he was doing that at the behest of his corporate donors that were behind his campaign. And he was doing that really secretly because he didn't come out and say that he was going to do it, but maybe he telegraphed it in some ways. But this idea to divide and conquer was in his mind. I mean, we all know the famous quote with Diane Hendricks when he said, well, first of all, what we're going to do is we're going to use divide and conquer, and then we're going to come after the public sector first, and then later on we're going to come after the private sector. So this was definitely in the back of his mind, but, you know, it was a secret. It was a secret until he, you know, unveiled what he likes to call the, well, what did he call it? His, you know, well, drop the bomb, as he put it.
Yes, thank you. But he had a policy decision. There were two separate issues in Act 10. What should I do to, is destroy too strong a word of the collective bargaining system? And second policy question, make public employees pay more for health care and pensions. So he could have opted for one or the other. He opted for both. Did organized labor see that coming on both fronts?
Whether we saw it coming or not, something like this has not happened in any state in the United States. So, no. Did we know what was going to come forward? We knew that he was going to come after organized labor, come after labor unions, but we didn't necessarily know in what form. But what we did was to organize a fight back that has not been seen in Wisconsin ever before around union issues or really across the country. And this, our fight back really inspired others in other states, in other places, to start to think about why having strong unions are important. And so that's the silver lining in a lot of this, that this discussion about whether or not people should have this right to organize is central in people's minds more now since Scott Walker's attack on or putting forward Act 10. And so we've seen in recent polls that young people especially are saying, looking at the world and saying, you know what, I'm worried about my economic security. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about my ability to raise a family and get ahead based on these kind of wages that are being paid now. And they're thinking about what their options are in terms of having a better life for themselves and their family. And they're saying that they want to have the right to organize if they want to.
In Act 10, didn't Governor Walker provide a template for other Republican governors? Because didn't we see that in Indiana and Iowa and elsewhere?
Yes.
So people like you must have been getting calls in the wake of Act 10 becoming law saying, hey, it's just springing up in our state. How can we fight it?
It was... Rapid fire.
How many states enacted similar?
I traveled to Indiana where, you know, in even a couple weeks into the Act 10 battle, where they were also, coming after labor unions. And so, yes, this was happening throughout the Midwest. This was something that many of the governors probably had gotten together before, and they had planned it out. The elections have consequences, and in 2010, there were a lot of governors that were elected that were not, you know, advocates for working people.
Well, but then we saw Governor Walker survive the recall in 2012, mm-hmm. reelected in 2014, mm-hmm. and now he's in a too close to call race with Mr. Evers. Mm-hmm. So, if his policy changes in Act 10 were so egregious and wrong in terms of the middle class that you care passionately about, mm-hmm. why did he survive the recall and reelected in 2014?
Good questions. One is that the playing field is not level in terms of politics, in terms of the influence of money, the influence of corporate cash coming in to underwrite many of the advertisements and the campaigns of Governor Walker. So that's one reason. And that, you know, organized labor has taken a beating by corporate America for a long time in terms of vilifying and painting the basic act of joining a union in a negative way. And so this is our opportunity to turn that around. And I think that that's happening. There are more people that are thinking about it in a positive way, in which they should think about it in a positive way, than ever before. And we have a great opportunity to elect Tony Evers, In a couple of short weeks from now. And it's important to remember also, but in the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, we're not involved in politics to be involved in politics. Mm-hmm. We're not about, you know, just being in politics for politics' sake. We're doing this for a reason, to be able to level the playing field for working people to have a better shot at a better life. So the rules that are written that allow people to organize or to collectively bargain, that's very, very important to us. But we're not the labor movement. We're not a red movement. We're not a blue movement. We're the union movement, and we stand up for working people. Now, we want to elect people that support our issues, and right now those people that are supporting our issues are Democrats. But that hasn't historically always been the case. Many times there have been Republicans who also support the right to organize. This is a newer phenomenon where we have people like Leah Vukmir in her debate with Tammy Baldwin the other night. She was asked about the new NAFTA, and she was asked about she supports the trade deal,
yeah.
But does she support Mexican workers' right to organize a union? And she couldn't answer the question. Now, I don't think that Leah Vukmir really believes, I can't believe that she believes that, but I think that she was thinking about what do her corporate donors, what do they want her to say?
Okay.
So we're far afield from really understanding our fundamental rights and in protecting those rights.
What's at stake in the Wisconsin's elections on November 6th? U.S. Senator, Governor, Attorney General, and all 99 members of the Assembly and 17 members of the Senate. What's at stake for organized labor?
Well, what's at stake is really having somebody there that can level the playing field, that can restore our rights that have been taken away from Scott Walker and his allies. But, you know, Act 10 is one, collective bargaining for public sector workers, the so-called right to work.
Yes.
That, of course, he didn't announce that either. The banning or the taking away of our prevailing wage laws for our construction workers, project labor agreements. All of these are important fundamental rights that have been stripped and taken away during Scott Walker's reign.
The betting in the Capitol, what the polls say that Mr. Evers and Mr. Walker is a dead heat. Mm-hmm. But the betting in the Capitol is that Republicans keep control of the Assembly because their margin is so huge.
Mm-hmm.
Last week or within the last few days, Speaker Voss said none of the dozens of significant policy changes that the Republicans have enacted, he will not stand for any of them to be repealed. How do you move that mountain?
Well, one step at a time, always, but we're not afraid of a hard work, that's for sure. And we're always going to have our eye on restoring these rights and not giving up. Just because, you know, Speaker Voss says it so doesn't mean it has to be so. And so we believe that we're on the right side for working people, and we believe that we'll have that support. So, you know, we believe that we can win this governor's race. Tony Evers being our next governor, we believe that we can pick up enough seats in the Senate to be able to have some more pro-working people in that chamber. In the Assembly, we'll see what happens, but we stand ready to work hard every single day.
If it's January and it is Governor Evers, what is your ask of him in terms of Act 10, to both restore the collective bargaining structures and do something about the donations of public employees towards their pensions and health care? Do you think public employees are paying too much for their pension and health care as a result of Act 10?
Well, I tell you what, we've already, you know, been in discussions with Tony Evers about these important issues. He's made it clear that he does not support the policies of Scott Walker in regards to public sector organized unions or private sector unions with these things. So we're going to be asking, and we have asked, that he restore all of the rights that have been taken away under Scott Walker, you know, restoring our reversing Act 10, prevailing wage, project labor agreements, child labor laws, the weakening of child labor laws, that should be reversed as well. So-called right to work. All of these things, but really even more in terms of making sure that we have good regulations or good laws here mm-hmm. that can help working people.
In 2017, the number of U.S. workers in unions was about 11%. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, it was about 8%. My question is, has that percentage membership in Wisconsin hit bottom? Are you able to envision, and are you building back now? Was 8% in 2017 your lowest point, Stephanie?
Well, we do intend to grow that number, absolutely. And we believe that moving forward, we have to make sure that working people know that we have that our doors are open to every working person who wants to have a better shot at a better paycheck and a better life. So our doors are wide open for working people throughout the state of Wisconsin and in new industries as well. Doesn't matter if you're, in what field you are, if you're working for a living, you ought to have the right, if you want to join a union, you ought to have the right to do that.
If in 3 years Foxconn is employing 13,000 Wisconsin workers, do you anticipate any of them being members of unions?
Well, I'd certainly like to see that, and that's it's a huge workforce, and we definitely like to see the people that are working there having a voice in their workplace, because that's what's really going to help our communities, help those families. And so, that is something that we will definitely be working on.
Is the AFL-CIO, is one of your priorities raising the minimum wage or going towards what's been called the living wage? I don't quite understand what that means, but do you want to see the minimum wage now $7.25? Is that part of your legislative agenda?
We have supported having a strong minimum wage, a strong living wage. I mean, I think the difference is, minimum wage often is not anywhere near what an actual living wage is. And so, while we have a minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, really everybody knows that you can't really even support yourself or a family if that's what you have going. So we definitely support the highest wages possible for all workers. And again, this is what we want. We want to have the ability to have a fair share of the profit of companies, right? We're doing the work, we're getting the job done. We should have the ability to take care of ourselves and our family. And another point here with a lot of this discussion of industries with low wages is what's happening with these workers who then are working a full-time job, but then they're eligible for public assistance. They're eligible for Badger Care or food stamps. We, the taxpayers, are subsidizing these corporations, and that's just not right. So I think that's something that we need to take a hard look at, and as one of the reasons, of many reasons, that we should increase wages for working people in Wisconsin.
What are the most fertile industries for your attempts to get more union members? You mentioned healthcare; that's growing. Are you seeing a trend of more healthcare workers interested or joining unions?
I think that that there are a lot of working people that are interested. The question is, how do they take those steps to actually get the organization done so that they can have an organized voice at the workplace? So that is going to be our challenge in these coming years.
What about construction workers? Are a healthy number of them members of unions?
Absolutely. They have very strong structures and strong apprenticeship and training programs, which make sure that they have the highest quality workers to get the job done right the first time.
And what about service workers or in the hospitality industry, given the backdrop in Las Vegas where there was just a strike? Is that an area where you're seeing more service and hospitality workers?
We're certainly seeing those conversations taking place. We're certainly seeing that that workers are expecting, a better paycheck, and they're seeing that how to do that is through organization.
There's been a significant drop in the number of Wisconsin workers who are members of unions since 2010. Do you have the resources to elect Mr. Evers and other Democrats on November 6th?
Well, it's not us alone, that's for sure. But with the coalition and with what's happening, people are tired of Scott Walker's policies. People are, ready for a change, ready for a future where we can really get the state back on track.
And how do you rate Mr. Trump's 20 months in office in terms of your issues?
In terms of our issues, listen, some of the issues that he talks about in terms of this new NAFTA deal mm-hmm. going through and having the right for Mexican workers to absolutely organize into a union if they so choose, then absolutely we support that. But there's a lot of other issues that he's not doing right by working people in America, and he needs to take a good hard look at that, and that's what that's what we're looking at every day, for sure.
The tariffs, especially with China, are those hurting working class Wisconsin residents who are members of your unions?
The tariff issue is a complicated issue because we've really lost a lot of jobs to the NAFTA deal due to the TPP. So it's a complicated issue. But what we really need to do is focus back on making sure that we are buying American-made products whenever possible. So the idea that the state is going to have procurement ability, that they're going to purchase American-made products or Wisconsin-made products first whenever they can, rather than going to other countries.
One symbolic way that you and I remember was look for the union label. Is that even relevant anymore?
That was a great campaign. That was a great campaign, and we need to get back to some of that as well.
You mentioned the millennials. Are they interested in unions, and if so, why? What's your elevator pitch to a millennial?
Well, if you're going to go at it alone, you're going to have a much harder time of it than going, with a group of your coworkers. And so think about your ability to negotiate your own wage individually versus in a collective group. And it hasn't really been working for your parents not being in unions, so maybe you ought to try something different.
Just returning to Foxconn quickly, will there be an attempt to organize Foxconn workers?
That is something that I'm sure that is something that we are working on.
Now, let's fast forward a little more than 2 years. There'll be an election for president. Who of the many potential candidates are most supportive of your issues?
Well, that's definitely too soon to tell. I would like to say that all of the candidates, when they line up, they will all 100% be supportive of our issues.
Okay. So you're not going to single out one right
now?
No. All right. You will have a very successful first 2 years as president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Finish the sentence, please.
If we can make some changes in this next election, and that we can reinvigorate the labor movement so that more people are actively engaged in their unions and more people are joining their unions.
Are you part of the fight over who draws the next set of district lines for Congress and the Assembly and the Senate? Have you joined that at all?
We are a part of that that issue, and as you know, that they're very unfairly drawn. This is if we looked at another country and in another continent, and we looked at the way that they did these lines, we would say that's a highly undemocratic country, mm-hmm. and we would be having a lot of criticism. But here, it's been done, and it needs to change. It should be fairly drawn so that people have the right to have their voices known, heard through the electoral process.
Maybe a last question: which state is done the best? I know you presidents meet often, and officers of your state AFL-CIOs. Which state is having the most success in terms of turning a corner, getting significantly more union members? Is there any? Any in the Midwest?
I think that I don't know if I can signal out or talk about one in particular, but certainly people across the Midwest are getting to work and making sure that their unions are very strong. Well, I can point to Missouri.
Okay.
Did a great thing just about a month ago or they were able to overturn their right to work law through a referendum, through an election, and the voters rejected the so-called right to work by a 2-to-1 margin.
Okay. So, after 8 years of Walker and the Republican leader changes, you're optimistic about the next few years here in Wisconsin?
I'm very optimistic about our future.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, new president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, thank you for coming into Wisconsin.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
You.